Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Codex Magica by Tex Mars when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small." He said, "You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words, which tell us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the law school. To learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct at 417-273-4967. Some of the biggest names in politics and in business and industry, at least here in the United States and around the world, are men like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the governor of California, George Bush, president of the United States, Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense, Pat Roberts, Rudy Giuliani, Bill Clinton, Yasser Arafat, Menachem Begin, Napoleon Bonaparte, John Kerry, Billy Graham. What do all of these famous personages have in common? They were all 32nd degree Masons. Illuminists. The Illumined Ones. Tex Mar has written a 600-page book called The Codex Magica to identify who these people are and what their ultimate aims and objectives are for you and I. The cattle, the goyim, the useless eaters down here at the bottom of the barrel. And Mars begins in Chapter 1 by saying, "What you're going to read and see in this book is forbidden to you. Discovering these things could be highly dangerous to your life and your health. Forbidden knowledge is sweet, but it's also deadly, and many men have died for revealing far fewer secrets than are found in this book." Now, I'm not trying to be over dramatic, nor am I attempting to be sensational, but this is a warning. And make sure very sure that you possess the daring and the courage to proceed before you read any further. Lingering in my mind are the names of courageous men who have gone before you and me and are now dead because they exposed this forbidden knowledge of the Illumined Ones. Captain William Morgan. He was abducted, kidnapped, and then ritually murdered, his lifeless body dumped into a lake after he published a book unmasking Masonic secrets. Danny Casalero committed suicide, having his wrists cut and bleeding to death in a hotel room where he had gone to meet a confidential source. Paul Wilcher was found nude, his body stiff as it sat on a toilet in his home, only days after he mailed his expose manuscript to U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno. And then there's Wolfgang Mozart, the most famous classical composer, the world-famous classical composer, who paid the ultimate penalty, arsenic poisoning that racked his body. Mozart, he too, had revealed some of the secrets of Freemasonry. He was blackballed by the order. So frightened were his friends and family that not one human soul so much as attended his funeral. And it is said that Mozart's faithful dog followed dutifully behind the lonely funeral wagon. The sad and forlorn canine was the only living creature in sight as the body of the man that all of Europe had once toasted and applauded was taken to its burial site. So I ask you, dear friend, once again, do you dare to discover the secrets that many have been punished for merely knowing, let alone revealing? So are you sure, very sure, that you want to enter into this forbidden zone? You see, we are all surrounded by evil on every side. Quite literally, we have become immersed in it. But the wicked and the deceivers want us to believe that evil doing is exceptional. From childhood, we have been taught that evil and corruption are the province of the few, that most people are virtuous, honest, and good, that most of our politicians truly have our interests at heart, and that the social system, with the exception of just a few deviants and criminal types, is really basically sound. Now, with such assurances, most people breathe a deep sigh of relief. "Don't worry, be happy," said the words of a fun-time novelty song a few decades back, and most of us appreciate the degree with the sentiment. After all, it's not nice to be negative, to be a skeptic in the midst of a nation of wannabe happy faces. But unfortunately, the masses who believe this nonsense have been gulled and are destined to receive very soon a very rude shock and a very abrupt awakening. As Christopher Mark observed recently in an insight-filled article entitled A Grand Deception, the theft of America and the world. The world is completely corrupt beyond our wildest imaginations, and the United States is perhaps the most gullible of all nations. And Mark goes on to explain it this way. He said, "For now grasp this. The world you believe exists doesn't exist. We live in a form of the Matrix, not unlike the world portrayed in the John Carpenter movie. They live, except that high government officials and international bankers are the elite who control all you see and hear, as did the aliens portrayed in the movie. But the foolish may object that we have the media to protect us from the corrupt. We cannot be deceived so long as there is a free press to act as our watchdog." Ah, but there's the rub. There's no free press. And Christopher Mark adds, "The news is a farce, as is the case with the financial institutions which are concentrated in the hands of just a few. Long ago, the media was bought and paid for, and what you read and what you see on a daily basis on your television or hear on your radio is largely manufactured, and you're being lied and lied to each and every day. Thomas Mann, the keen social observer and philosopher, once suggested that men are enormously and erroneously taught to believe that it is forbidden and wrong to expose the works of darkness, or to reveal the machinations of evildoers, especially evildoers who, though they act in hellish ways, the deceived world at large so obviously holds in the highest regard. That is the secret delight and security of hell, that it is not to be informed on, that it is protected from speech, and that it just is, but cannot be made public in the newspaper or be brought by any word of critical knowledge. How interesting the realization that, as Thomas Mann put it, hell takes secret delight in its ability to keep secrets. In Proverbs 9, verses 13 through 18, it seems to have a relation to this concept, where it tells us that a foolish woman sits in the high place of the city. To call passengers who go right on their way, she saith unto them, "Bread eaten in secret is pleasant." But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. So why do the Illuminati value secrecy so highly, and why all of the mysterious encoded signs, handshakes, symbols, language, and codes? One finds many reasons. For one thing, the psychopath. These are the kind of people who are Illuminists. They seem to be drawn to the darkness, to mysterious perversions and deep occultism. Nothing so arouses the deep mind's attention than the call of the dark, arcane, and mysterious. Paul Huston writes in his book, Mastering Witchcraft, "Secrecy is deemed essential among witchcraft and witchcraft sects, and witchcraft is, in essence, Illuminism." Huston explains, "Now, witchcraft consists of knowledge, and knowledge brings power. Power shared is power lost. Although we have entered the age of Aquarius, along with its attendant freedom and loosening of restrictions, it will still be very much in our interests as a witch to shroud certain of your doings in a reasonable veil of secrecy." So as you will discover in studying the pages of Codex Magica, the Illuminati certainly do not have, or excuse me, they certainly do have much to hide. Seeing as how the leaders of this notorious organization are responsible for hardship, bloodshed, and revolutionary terror on a global scale, if their secrets were indeed found out, there would be hell to pay. And if the masses were ever to wake up from their trance and begin to understand just how horribly they have been deceived and taken advantage of, they would angrily rise en masse and string up the elite from the nearest telephone pole. But the most terrible secret of all, there is also the matter of the most terrible secret of all, the secret that, if discovered, would sound the death knell of the Illuminati and Freemasonry. Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree, touched on this in his book, Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. He said, "Freemasonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. It's an outer organization concealing an inner brotherhood of the elect. The Invisible Society is a secret fraternity dedicated to a mysterious secret confined within the halls of Masonry." And as Hall alludes, Freemasonry hides its greatest secret even from the membership. Only an invisible inner brotherhood is entrusted with it. Robert Guffey, writing in the book The Conspiracy Reader, reports that the cryptocrats, as he calls the elite, consider most Americans to be sheep who must be kept from discovering the black cauldron of dirty secrets hidden to them. The mysterious secret of which Manly P. Hall, the 33rd degree Mason, writes, surely falls into this category of dirty secrets kept squirreled away in the black cauldron. Now, the dirtiest secret found inside that black cauldron, the mysterious secret, is this: that the unknown god, worshipped by the Masons and called by such hazy, nebulous names as the Great Architect of the Universe, and by code names such as Abaddon, Mahabone, and Jobulon, is actually none other than Satan, or Lucifer. That is the greatest of secrets that the Illuminati must shield from view until the initiate reaches the 30th degree. The illumined ones, the so-called enlightened men, who knows the secret, the darkest secrets, is taught by his superiors and comes to believe that all who are in on the secret are somehow more sophisticated, more urbane, more intelligent, and more spiritually astute than the uncouth, the vulgar, the coarse people who stupidly follow after the God of the Scripture, the Holy Bible. Stupid people deserve to be deceived, say the Masons and the Illuminists, and thus, as Emil Grillet comments, the elite conceal in order to baffle the vulgar. Marie Roberts and Hugh Ormsby Lennon in Secret Texts, The Literature of Secret Societies, notes that the rituals, rites, symbols, emblems, and other tools of the secret societies are mysteries that must not be revealed to the profane, the lewd, and the unworthy. So how does it feel, dear reader, to realize that the wicked men of the Illuminati and of the Lodge and other secret societies consider you and I and everyone outside their own special preserve as profane, lewd, and unworthy? Now, to maintain their rotten and corrupt body of secrets, the Illuminati leaders and groups employ symbols. The rites, ceremonies, hand signs, and grips of the Illuminus are based on the science and art of symbolism. Now, it's said that symbolism began as recorded in the Bible's book of Genesis when God put a mark or a sign on Cain who had slain his brother Abel. Throughout human history, marks, signs, pictures, and hieroglyphs came to be used to convey words, ideas, concepts, and secrets. By symbols, wrote Thomas Carlyle in Sartre Resartus, is man guided and commanded, made happy, made wretched. He everywhere finds himself surrounded with symbols, recognized as such or not, or maybe not recognized at all. As you'll discover in Codex Magica, the elite use many symbols and signs to hide and to obfuscate their magical work and their alchemy. In the Blue Lodge, that is the first 3 degrees, the initiate takes an oath of obligation, pledging, where he says, "I will always hail, ever conceal, and never reveal any of the arts, parts, or points of the hidden mysteries of ancient Freemasonry." The Order of the Eastern Star, the woman's Masonic organization, informs its new members that the order teaches them of their duties and obligations by means of secret signs and passwords. The initiate is further instructed that she must bind herself to preserve the most sacred secrecy respecting the work of the order. Symbols are more than just pictures. Consider this. When you and I, as patriotic citizens, see the red, white, and blue flag of the United States waving aloft, many emotions are aroused in our minds and in our hearts. Memories sometimes gush forth, feelings of love of country, home, and family, perhaps deep appreciation for our country's founders, its constitution, and for the soldiers and servicemen who have died to protect and to keep us free. All this bound up in just one symbol. Well, to the Masons and other Illuminists, their occult symbols also embody a deep and varied set of meanings. Alex Horn in Sources of Masonic Symbolism distinguishes between a mere emblem and a symbol. An emblem is something that stands for something else, and it says, he says, while a symbol has a moral and spiritual meaning. That moral and spiritual meaning is of necessity reserved as a secret in nature, but these corrupt cultists, because of their secrets, should be exposed to the light. Their great work and grand plan would be vulnerable to destruction, as it should be. That but kept secret, the symbols and signs of the Illuminati exert a very strong force. And Foster Bailey, a 33rd degree in the spirit of Freemasonry, explains that a symbol veils or hides a secret, and it is that which veils mysterious forces. These energies, when released, can have a very potent effect. Now, to the man whose entire life is immersed in magical symbols, signs, and codes, and who has taken a solemn oath to maintain secrecy and fear of disclosure, the world takes on a supernatural, paranoid quality. Indeed, such men are schizophrenic in tendency, being torn between their role in the normal everyday world and their underground existence in the sordid world of their occult fraternity. Illuminists are indeed very dangerous men. Now, it is important that we all understand that almost all of the symbols and signs of the elite are very ancient in origin. Former Scottish Rite Freemasonry Sovereign Grand Commander Henry C. Clausen, a 33rd degree Mason, who was appointed in 1942 by President Roosevelt to head up the commission to investigate the Pearl Harbor attack. He writes that the footsteps of the order go deep, and its symbols are thousands of years old. They arose in ancient times, and the signs, symbols, and inscriptions come to us from across the long drifting centuries, and they will be found in ancient Sumerian clay tablets and libraries of the cities of Lair, Lagash, and others of the first true urban civilization. This occurred about 600 years before Egypt was civilized. In other words, Clausen is telling his Masonic readers that their signs and symbols came from Babylon. The Holy Scripture warns that the ancient mystery religion of the wicked Babylon will bounce back into demonic prevalence in the last days, as we see in Revelation 13, 17, and 18. And here we have the Sovereign Grand Commander, the International Chieftain of the Masonic Lodge, informing us of the Babylonian origins of the secret symbols and signs of his Illuminist order. Now, when we realize that, for the elite, their symbols are claimed to be infused with dynamic life. Well, to be real things, active images that make and testify and create, we begin to comprehend the power and explosive meaning with which the Illuminati endow their signs and symbols. To them, these are not just geometric shapes, architectural patterns, lines, and circles. Their signs and symbols, both live and possess, or they live rather, and possess, creative power, and they are archetypes and thought forms. In sum, they are real things that perform. One is reminded, therefore, of the image of the beast, which in the last days is prophesied to both move about and to speak, as we read in Revelation chapter 13. So pity the poor, the hoodwinked Mason. You know, it's bad enough that the elite hide their dirty little and big secrets behind such smoke screens as secret hand signs, codes, and handshakes, but what is remarkably obscene is that they hoodwink their own people. The highest levels of the Freemasons, for example, have a special word for the manner in which they seek to deceive and mislead not only the profane, that is, you and me, but also the vast majority of their fellow Masons. That word is hoodwink, and it is defined as the effort to put forth by the lying men at the top to keep the lower level members in secret or in darkness. Well, in the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, editor Dr. Albert Mackey, a 33rd degree and former Sovereign Grand Commander, claims that secrecy, silence, and deceit, in other words, hoodwink, is an absolute necessity so that the mysteries of our art should be preserved. Now, Helena Blavatsky, co-mason and founder of Theophacy, was unusually candid once when she said or remarked, quote, "What is one to do when, in order to rule men, it is necessary to deceive them?" Because almost invariably, the more simple, the more silly, and the more gross of the phenomenon, then the more likely it is to succeed. Now listen to the admission of Albert Pike. Remember, he's a former Sovereign Grand Master who Masonic historian Manly P. Hall, who is also a 33rd degree, magnificently praised as a Masonic Prometheus, a king among men by the divine right of merit. He went on to say that Masonry, like all of the religions of the mysteries, the Hermeticism and alchemy, conceals its secrets from all except the adepts and the sages, or the elect, and uses false explanations and misinterpretations of its symbols to mislead those who deserve only to be misled. To conceal the truth, which it calls light, from them, and to draw them away from it. Well, what impudence, what arrogance. Pike is letting us in on the deceit. Even if a man is a Mason, he may not be adjudged worthy of being promoted as one of the adepts and sages, or the elect. So in that case, along with non-Masons, he is purposely misled by false explanations and misinterpretations, and according to Pike, he deserves to be misled. We are reviewing the book Codex Magica, 600-page treatise. It's actually a catalog written by Tex Mars. It contains more than 1,000 photographs. Photographs of the most famous people in our civilization and society, making these kinds of hand gestures and codes, such as Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. And here's a picture of Musharraf, General Pervez Musharraf. The arm patch on the military uniform of Pakistan's president. It tells a number of tales. And against a black circle, it's a background that we find the familiar crescent moon and the Star of Islam, actually of pagan origin, being representative of Diana, the witchcraft star, the moon goddess, as well as the two crossed swords in the pagan era, a sign of Mars, the god of war. It is doubtful that Musharraf has any idea of the actual meaning of these symbols that he wears on his arm patch. Well, boys and girls, there are people all over America, members of the Masonic Order, for instance, who make these signs and symbols and wear these patches and these rings and so on, and they don't have a clue either. They think they do. They're told that they do. They're informed that they are the enlightened ones. But in reality, they are just as much in the dark as the rest of us. But Tex Mars has spent more than 20 years and put together the Codex Magica. Let's see where you can get a copy of it. Codex Magica, published by Rivercrest Publishing, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Tex Mars is spelled T-E-X-E, Mars, M-A-R-R-S. Go into your local bookstore and see if you can get a copy. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967 and ask for it. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book Codex Magica by Tex Mars. I imagine you can get a copy at Barnes & Noble. I picked this up down in Austin, Texas at a secret bookstore. I don't know the price of it. I imagine it's going to be $30, $40, $50. It's 600 pages. It's 8.5 by 11, so it's up. It's more on the order of a newsletter than it is a book. It's got pretty good size print, but it's 600 plus pages. It's got footnotes on footnotes. It contains 1,000 photographs. And the photographs are very, very revealing. If you want to see Bill Clinton giving secret signs, being photographed by the news media, it's all here. There are people like, here's the back page. Let me show you an example of it. George Bush, in a news conference, is giving a secret sign. Now, he does this right out in public. It's done right over television. You see it when you watch the CBS Evening News. Their logo is the all-seeing eye. That is an occultic symbol. And these people, like here's Rumsfeld, and Rumsfeld is giving a secret sign. To all of the people out there in the viewing audience who are Masons or who are Illuminists and they see him give the sign, they know immediately that what he is saying is for the consumption of the Goyim. and that he gives this sign like a wink, you know, hey, I'm pulling this guy's leg. I know better, but, you know, that's what I have to tell him in order to keep him deceived. John Kerry giving the clenched fist. Here's Pat Roberts with the clenched fist over his heart. Here's Rudy Giuliani with a secret handshake with somebody here. And you can see from the photographs themselves and with the with the explanations in the footnotes what these symbols and signs mean, which are taken from books like Morals and Dogma. So when you go into the Masonic order, you know, you have to learn your handshakes and your secret signs and so on. And it's not just the Masons. There are a whole host and plethora of these secret organizations around the world, like the Odd Fellows and Knights of Pythicus and so on. There's probably 10 of them listed here that I recognize that we see, you know, routinely here in the United States. Well, George Steinmetz, yet another Masonic author, writes, there is a secret doctrine in Freemasonry, and that secret doctrine is concealed rather than revealed by the very lectures which we Masons are told offer a rational explanation of the ceremonies of initiation. Oh my, so the poor Masons must sit and listen to a bunch of boring lectures with superiors rattling on and on about what are described as the mysteries, when really it's all just malarkey, because the true explanations, the secret doctrine, is actually concealed to all except the few favored adepts. That's why when I reviewed and interviewed lower-level Masonic friends of mine who are more than happy to privately confide to me all of the secrets that they have learned, I often find that almost everything they think they know is pure junk. The hard facts, the really useful information, is reserved for the Mason or the Masonic muckety-mucks, though it may be discovered with diligent investigation by others, no matter how much the Masonic order vainly attempts to conceal and to deny. Well, I might point out here that the average Joe Sixpack doesn't really care. And that's the tragedy of it all, because those that are in control, let's take the President of the United States, when he goes to make an appointment to the Supreme Court, do you honest to God believe that he makes an objective selection of a lower court judge or of somebody who is other than a Brother Mason or a member of Skull and Bones or one of these secret organizations? Boys and girls, every federal judge in America is a Mason. Every one of them. And if you're not, then you're working at a disadvantage. Now, Masonry offers to the highway patrolman. Now, in our local area here, all of the highway patrolmen are Masons. In our local county government, all of the board of county supervisors, the sheriff, all of the sheriff's deputies are all members of the Masonic Lodge. You can't get elected in this county without being a Mason. So for practical purposes, this organization is controlled by a national organization, which is controlled by an international organization, which is controlled by the Committee of 300. So while the local deputy sheriff actually believes that he's one of the adepts and that he knows the secrets of Masonry, he himself has been deceived and is used by Masonry, the order, to carry out its ultimate one-world objective. He may personally be opposed to the New World Order or opposed to certain philosophies and policies or national objectives, but his work as a deputy sheriff all contributes to the overall globalization of the world. And then those that don't belong to the Masonic order or don't belong to the secret organizations work at a big disadvantage because they don't have the economic advantages that the Masons have. You know, if a Mason is the county commissioner. And they're going to select, let's say, employment. You want to get a job with the county. And you're a young man, and say you're 18, 19, 20 years old. You just graduated from high school, and you'd like to get a job running the county road grader, or you'd like to get a county job, and your dad is a mason who goes to the lodge meetings, who lets it be known to one of the county commissioners, my boy, Charlie, needs a job. And the county commissioner says, well, we're looking for qualified applicants. And that's how you get a job with the county. That's how you get a job in Ozark County. So if you belong to the Masonic Order, it has great economic benefits. Great economic benefits. And that's why most people join. If you want to be promoted in the Highway Patrol, you need to be a member of the lodge. And if you are, your promotions are guaranteed. You'll just go right on up the line. Albert Pike. Albert Pike, he wrote the book Morals and Dogma. He was the grand poobah of the Masonic Order after the Civil War. And he said, what is most worth knowing in Masonry is never very openly taught. The symbols are displayed, but they're mute. It is by hints only that the initiate is put upon the track of the hidden secret. How does one finally discover the inner secrets of Freemasonry? My own experience provides the answer. It has taken me many years of meticulous research and study of the ancient mystery religions of Babylon, Samaria, Greece, Rome, and China. And I have spent many nights reading old textbooks and treatises on medieval and occult subjects. Conducted intensive investigation of the rituals and symbols of the scores of secret societies and orders, and spent years examining the true teachings and practices of the New Age, witchcraft, Satanism. Moreover, without study of the Holy Bible and constant referral back to it, much of the knowledge that I have acquired could not be properly understood. Now that's Tex Mars. Masonic expert Lynn F. Perkins alludes to the gigantic account of extracurricular research and work needed to uncover the greatest secrets of the Masonic fraternity, where he writes, "The true wisdom is concealed and hidden, not only from those who do not join the Masonic Order, but also from those who take the degrees, join the order. And it will remain hidden until each Mason seeks revelation and then finds the truth for himself. There are no interpretations in the ritual. They have to be sought elsewhere." Pike, echoing Steinmetz, Hall, Perkins, and all the other high-level Masonic authorities, goes on and goes so far as to mock and disparage lower-level Masons, especially those who have earned only the first three degrees, called the Blue Lodge degree. After acknowledging that the lower-level brethren are intentionally misled, he goes on to say that it is not intended that the initiate understand the symbols and deepest secrets of the order. But worse, the Masonic Lodge rituals and lectures are designed so that the lower-level Masons shall imagine that they understand them. It is only at a later time, as he has moved up the ladder of degrees, that the purposely dumbed-down Mason discovers that he's been had, that he's been played for a fool. In other words, he's been hoodwinked, which is a Masonic term. So in effect, Masons are lied to, tricked, then made fun of, and intentionally led astray, with only a little knowledge added to their brain reserves or reservoirs as they advance up the chain. Meanwhile, the poor pitiful souls imagine that they are really in on all of the super-duper secrets of the craft. Their Masonic superiors play them for suckers. P.T. Barnum of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus fame surely was right when he exclaimed, "There's a sucker born every minute." To which yours truly, author of Codex Magica, might add, "And a 32nd and 33 degree Mason is behind the veil laughing his head off and rolling in the aisles every time a new sucker is initiated into the first degree of Freemasonry." You can rest assured that as you rise through the ranks, the ultimate light that you're seeking after is this. What is the light? It is that Lucifer is the god of Freemasonry. Lucifer, the god of this world. And they learn that at the 30th degree. So every 32nd degree Mason that you know is a worshiper of Satan the devil. And he knows it and he understands it. That's the light that he was seeking after from the day he joined the lodge as a Blue Lodge first degree Freemason. Now some men, when they get up to the 30th, 31st, 2nd, and 3rd degrees, recognize that and then take a good look at themselves and say, I think I'm going to opt out of this. I had a young man here who was a Mason, and he said he took the oath of Freemasonry, and he agreed that if he should reveal the secrets of Freemasonry, that he should have his throat slit from ear to ear. He agreed to that when he joined the lodge. Now, at the time when these people join, you know, it's just fun and frolic. I'm not so sure that it's just fun and frolic. The people who are in control of our government, the people who are in control of the governments around the world, are the minions and the laborers working for the god of this world, Satan the devil. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff, boys and girls. Now, the Brotherhood of Darkness, as a good friend of mine, Dr. Stanley Monteith, calls the Illuminati, is quite confident that it can easily maintain the highest level of secrecy regarding the actual meaning and import of its signs and symbols. Its leaders believe that they can even afford to communicate these signals and messages in plain sight. Sure, in the knowledge that the trance-like masses are incapable of recognizing the awful ongoing masquerade of deception that stares them right in the face. Martin Short, who authored a book Inside the Brotherhood exposing the Masonic Order inside, at least inside of Great Britain, observed that Masons believing their secrets to be oblivious to detection are known to mutter words of near contempt as they sing a little ditty called The Entered Apprentice's Song. A verse of this melody goes like this. The world is in pain, our secrets to gain, and still let them wonder and gaze on. They ne'er can divine the word or the sign of a free and accepted Mason. I might pause here and point out that in the book, here's one here, General Robert E. Lee, commanding officer of the Army of the Confederacy. This is an oil portrait, Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia. Will Rogers was a famous storyteller and Freemason. Here he is in the pose of Sublime Knight's Elected Degree. Now, General Lee is in the pose of a Freemason, and so is Will Rogers. This is on page 403. Now, I wouldn't know that, just being one of the non-members, but here's one here called Life of the Party, the biography of Pamela Digby Churchill. Pamela Harriman is doing more here with her body than merely being Life of the Party. A Churchill heir, Pamela was a mistress of one of the Illuminati Rothschilds and later married Governor Averill Harriman. Patriarch of Skull and Bones, Pamela Harriman met and mentored young Bill Clinton when he was just a student at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. She introduced the young Bill Clinton to her aging husband and Viola. The political career of William Jefferson Clinton was on the fast track. Many years later, after Pamela's husband passed away and President Bill Clinton was in the White House, Clinton appointed Pamela to the prestigious post of ambassador to France in Paris. you know, one hand washes the other. Dr. Peter Ruckman, author of many fine books exposing the conspiracy and defending the Bible, in his newsletter recently penned an article about the little man who wasn't there. Ruckman sagely observed that historians, like other establishment experts, can scarcely be trusted, for they invariably write a history they would like to believe. They limit themselves to reporting only that which comports and agrees with the socially accepted view of history and truth. If a set of facts is unpleasant or is inconvenient to the officially approved mantra or version of events, such as 9/11, then reality must suffer. Facts must become non-facts, and lies must be converted into reliable truths, Ruckman remarks, such as the Kennedy assassination or the Pearl Harbor attack or the attacks on the Twin Towers, things like that. He said, when I was a boy, we repeated several little doggerels that turned out to be gems of wisdom and content. One went, "Last night I saw upon a star a little man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. Oh, gee, I wish he would go away." Some non-existent spooks, Ruckman adds, are very persistent. In Codex Magica, we shine a bright spotlight on the little man sitting on the stair and Viola. We discover the incontrovertible fact that he's not only there, he's not a little man at all. He's a giant, dark, wicked, corrupt, conspiring, sly, cunning, devious, dangerous ogre who fully deserves all of the contemptible attention that we can focus on him. He's more than a spook. He's a blood-sucking parasite. He is a monster who is sitting on the stair blocking us from entering. He is a criminal thug lying in wait to waylay you and me and to rob us of our belongings, to rob us of our health, and to rob us of our lives. And without him sitting there detrimentally blocking our path, the world would be a far better place, certainly a safer and a happier place. Bob Whitaker, a South Carolinian who has done many fine and adventurous things in his life, teaching college classes, serving as a senior staffer on Capitol Hill, and writing copy for the Voice of America radio broadcast, points out that anyone today who simply believes the obvious is ignorantly and unfairly branded as an extremist, a conspiracy monger, a racist, or worse. Men are not free, and Whitaker suggests to tell the truth. In George Orwell's book 1984, it turns out that the whole hideous totalitarianism that crushed the hero is based on ending one simple, useless-sounding freedom. Freedom, it says, is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 = 4. How incredible. Whitaker is right on target. Who would have ever thought that in the once great United States of America would reside nearly 300 million people, virtually every one of whom today is shaking in his boots, quivering, numb with fear over what dreadful things might happen if he just once simply put his foot down, gritted his teeth, and spit out the words, "I see a little man on the stair. He is there. And 2 + 2 = 4. And that's all there is to it, period." How sad that most men, by their cowardly silence, become secret collaborators acquiescing in their own enslavement. What a marvelous and wonderful world this world would be if just a small portion of honest and thoughtful, courageous men and women would view the revealing and provocative photographs, illustrations, and proofs in Codex Magica and exclaim with all of their might in a loud, loud voice to all within hearing range, "I see it. I no longer will remain bound by the willful ignorance that binds the multitudes. I will tell others, and I'll speak out until someday, maybe soon, the whole rotten occult Illuminati establishment comes crashing down." Well, don't count on it any time recently or any time in the near future. The progress that's been made by the Illuminati from 1776 to the present time has been pretty phenomenal. It's taken 220 years, but despite the 220 years, they are now on the verge of creating this new one-world government, which is where we were at the Tower of Babel. And from the Tower of Babel until today, some 4,000 years, we have been working our hearts out to reestablish this one-world government. And it's just about to occur. And when it does, it will be a bloodbath. Well, so says the book of Revelation. A bloodbath that will only last for a short period of time. Some of the names that you're going to recognize here in the book, Julia Roberts, the mysterious photo of Oscar-winning actress Julia Roberts in Time magazine, gives us an intriguing view of two rings that she wears. On her right hand is the blue-stoned rectangular ring, and on her left hand is a ring with a strange image. Indeed, one could even say the ring has a creepy and eerie image. In the accompanying article, the writer acclaims Roberts as the reigning queen of Hollywood. Oftentimes, these rock stars like Elvis Presley or Mick Jagger, these people are elevated in the world of Hollywood because of their connections with the Masonic Order, or with the Illuminus, or with the occult, or with Satanism. Here's an Angel of Death in Election 1996. This issue of Media Bypass magazine in September of 1996 featured the activities of Charles Hayes, who was said to be a retired operative of the CIA. According to the magazine, Hayes had been busy in retirement as a vigilante exposing the financial skullduggery and crookedness of various high-level politicians and world leaders. On the cover of the magazine, we find Mr. Hayes in front of Law Library Publications and a Great Seal of the United States plaque, puffing placidly on his pipe. But what stands out in this photograph is the mysterious ring with the devilish face composed of some type of blackish material inside of a circle. Well, a few months after this issue was published, Charles Hayes was indicted by a federal grand jury and arrested. News reports allege that Hayes was guilty of solicitation of murder. Did the revelations contained in the article in Media Bypass cause the elite to take action to shut him up? Or was something else in the way? What is the riddle of the mysterious ring with the curious image? Well, we'll take this up next time. It's called Codex Magica by Tex Mars. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.